Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate, they risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series, we talk with people in our community who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Chris Meyer, one of Global Guru's top 30 experts in negotiation, discusses his new book, Settle for More, Change Your Negotiation Mindset and Change Your Outcomes, which focuses on an abundance mindset in negotiation through a Christian perspective. Meyer is a professor studying and teaching motivation behavior and negotiation in the Hankama School of Business at Baylor University. Hosting today's conversation is KWBU's Community Engagement Coordinator, Rachel Velasco. This conversation was recorded February 19th in the KWBU studio.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for being here with us today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Rachel.
Absolutely. So let's just dive right in. I think it's so fascinating to read about all of the work that you've done and the fact that you are just like a top level recognized negotiation expert right here in our community in Waco, Texas. So I would love to hear just how did you get your start in this topic? Because it seems very like a very specific type of study to be in. So how did you get your start here?
It is it's a very niche, it's very specific, and not a lot of people focus solely on negotiation like I do. When I started grad school, I was coming from a sales career, and I had gone through a lot of very difficult sales. I worked mostly for small startups in the technology field, and I learned a lot through failure, and I thought, maybe there's a better way to do this. And so in grad school, I gravitated towards a mentor named Don Conlin, and he said, you want to know the best class to teach, Chris? It's negotiation. You should take a look at it. And it fit really well with some of the things that I had struggled with in my career. I was often, you know, really trying to balance what's good for me, what's good for customers, what's good for organizations, what's good for the customer organizations, and it was a difficult process for me. And so I gravitated towards that, and I still continue to learn today. There's so much out there about negotiation and how people interact. It's just something that I've never found an end to. It's always new. There's always something that you need to learn. There's always something that you need to do better. And so for that reason, I never left negotiation once I started.
I want to pick up on something that you mentioned because I read a quote from your book that I think really encapsulates what you were talking about when you were navigating this space in the sales world of like, I have to do what I have to do because I have a job to do and that's make the sale, but I also want to make sure that I'm serving the customer and they're getting what they need. And how do you, those things can sometimes be in conflict, but you want to make sure you're doing the right thing. And so this quote from your book I thought was really beautiful. It says, in the end, true success in negotiation lies not just in financial gain, but in the harmony between ethical conduct and achieving mutually beneficial outcomes. And I don't know that that's the first place my brain would go when you're talking about negotiation, but I think that's such a really beautiful and like balanced way to think about how you would interact. And I think that could apply at so many different types of situations and organizations and different skill sets that you could apply this to. And so I want to kind of dig a little bit more into that. Like, what made you land on this sort of as the basis by which you're building your work?
It's a really interesting story. I came to Baylor in 2005, and I came from Michigan State University, and I was very focused on the science behind negotiation and the science behind motivation and how people interact. And I got here, and I started teaching in the executive MBA program, and I would present a lot of the research to people, and they would say, that sounds great, but in the real world. And it was really a key for me to think about how can I bring this into the real world, because we're all in the real world. Even in the classroom, when we're doing simulations, when we're working through negotiation, it is the real world. And how you treat people, that follows you. And a lot of things that I heard ended in, well, it's just business. And that really keyed me. I had to find out why people thought that. And what I've come to is a lot of it is fear and scarcity. people are worried that they're going to miss out on something. People are worried that they're going to put themselves in a bad position with their job. But the reality is, and the science backs this up as well, if I'm taking care of the other people involved, I do better myself as well. And I think that that is such a cool finding in the science, and it's so important to get that across to people that it's not just I'm here for me, but I'm here for we. Like, we can all do better if we work together, find that interdependence, and then build on that.
That I think that's like a sound bite you could take with you and put anywhere. It's not just for me, but it's really for we. So using that kind of framework that you've built around the way that you think about negotiation, I would love to hear some real world scenarios and when you could apply this. I mean, we talked about you got your start in sales, and sales is clearly a negotiation field. I mean, that's really what that whole process is about, right? Like, I'm feeling you out to see what your needs are, also what your wants are, also your emotional state and how you feel about what you're going to purchase or not purchase, versus I have, you know, a goal that I have to reach because it's been mandated to me. So there's a lot of like tricky minefield that you're negotiating. So that's a pretty easy one. But I'd love to hear some other places that you could apply this sort of like, let's find the balance on what works well for both parties and how you would apply that.
I do tell a lot of stories in my classes and my training sessions about my previous life in sales. But the stories that people most want to hear are the stories when I relate it to my family. Because honestly, if you think about every interaction as a negotiation, even when I get in the car with my wife to decide where we're going to go to dinner, if I just impose my will, we're not going to have a very nice time, right? But we have to think about, how do we do this together? How do we make this better together? And I did this with all my kids when they were growing up. It was never, hey, go do your chores. It was, we're all in this together. I'm going to do these things. Do you have time that you could do these other things? And to bring them in and to make them part of what's going on, make them part of the organization that is the family, it's so powerful, and it's such a change. And it allows them to have some value, to do some things that are important, and not just to go do chores.
Have you ever thought about teaching a parenting class using some of these?
I don't.
Or have you in the past done that?
I have not taught a parenting class, and I don't know that that's my specialty. But I will say that understanding why people do things and really, really thinking about it, part of the change in the idea of negotiation started when Roger Fisher wrote the book Getting to Yes. And he said, we have to take the view of the other party. We have to think about what the other people are thinking if we really want to do well. And I know a lot of people know that, but I don't think a lot of people practice that. And so if you put that into practice and you think, okay, what is my high school senior thinking about when he gets home from school? He's certainly not thinking about emptying the dishwasher, but it's an important part of the family. And so how do I relate to him in a way that makes sense so that he can understand the value that he brings by doing that one little chore?
Yeah, well, I actually have a high school senior, and we actually have had these conversations about the dishwasher or cleaning up after the dog or whatever it is. And, you know, I think some of these tactics you don't think of as negotiations. You just think like, gosh, like I just have to live with this person. So how do we live in harmony? But I think there's a mind shift that could happen if we're thinking about it like, okay, there's something you want, there's something I want. How do we balance that and get the most out of it? And so would you say that there are any like specific techniques that you might give out? Like you might tell somebody like, hey, this is something you could implement like right now today that could maybe make those interactions a little smoother.
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest, you said the key word in my book, in my class, in all my training, we talk about mindset. And mindset is the key here. So if I go into any interaction and my mindset is about me and my outcome, it's going to change the interaction. If I go in and I think about everyone involved, actually, I can do better as well. It's not just that everyone involved does better, but the research will show that I do better as well. So if you want to end up on the better end of all of your interactions, going in with a motive to benefit the other people really pays off. And it's counterintuitive, and people don't think like that. Instead, they're thinking, how do I meet my quota? How do I get my kids to do their chores? How do I get the raise from my boss? How do I do this for me? But instead, if we go in and we're thinking about, how do I benefit that customer. And I'm not just talking about show them the ROI and things like that. Talk about real benefit. People say, you know, but this doesn't work in every situation. What happens when you go to buy a car? Because everybody uses that as the example. I've looked across the table at car salesmen and said, how do you make more money in this transaction? And I will tell you what, as soon as you show concern for their job today, you're going to get a better deal.
That makes actually kind of makes sense, because they feel like suddenly now we're in cahoots, right? Like, well, we're going to work together. And so you're going to help me, but I'm going to help you. So if you're going to help me, then let me see what I can do for you at the same time. So I think that's, I mean, what that's a great little nugget for everybody out there listening. Just put that one in your back pocket and see, especially if you're going to go buy a car.
Yeah, and it's any interaction, right? We very often think about, and a lot of it has to do with organizational goals that are set. Mm-hmm. All the organizational goals point to me. And so I think about that when I go in, when I go to a customer, when I'm working with a supplier, doesn't matter when I'm working with my boss, when I'm working with my subordinates, all those goals are pointed at me. So I'm naturally focused on me. But if you let go of that and you really think about, okay, what are we here to try and accomplish? What are we here for? And really embrace the others. It opens up so many more possibilities.
That's a really cool way to think about it. And I think that that's something new that people maybe don't immediately go to. Like you said, it's not where your brain goes first, but if you can kind of get in the habit of changing that, then, you know, who knows what could happen. That's really exciting. I think in that vein, because you do teach, you're a professor at Baylor. How do you get that across to students who maybe don't have the sort of life experience to know, like, some of the things that you might try really are going to backfire on you? And if you've never done that and had that experience, then you wouldn't really be able to pull from that. So what's that like working with students in this, when so much, I think, of what you talk about really comes down to like the nuance of learning relationship building and learning how to deal with other people? And sometimes students just don't have as much context with that. So I would love to hear about what those interactions and those situations are like.
It depends on the level of the student as to where I put the emphasis. Mm-hmm. With MBA students, you can very easily bring that into organizational life. But with the undergrads, and I'm teaching undergrads right now, they're wonderful. It's so much fun. They're so interesting. This generation is so very different from previous generations. And so I like that excitement to it. But the good thing about negotiation is, and teaching negotiation, is that they're still negotiating. They just aren't negotiating necessarily at work. And so you can bring it into, hey, when your roommate leaves the kitchen a mess, how do we address that? Because the reality is, I want negotiation to be something that permeates their lives, not just their organizational life. I don't want them to leave work, come home to their significant other, and just say, well, whatever, we're just going to, you know, muddle through this. I want people to have these skills so that when they sit down with kids, when they sit down with spouses, they can work through it. They can use it at their church. They can use it at their school. They can use it in their home. Negotiation is so pervasive. It's everywhere. And if we embrace that, I think it can really impact your life positively.
I'm wondering, as you're talking about this, a word that comes to mind would be, it's a way to manage conflict. So is there a difference between like conflict resolution and negotiation? Are those like, they feel like they could be pretty connected to each other, but, you know, I'm just curious if there is a lot of difference there.
I think conflict resolution is a different flavor of negotiation. So there's some similarities to it. Conflict resolution sometimes is focused on the negative. How do we get past a negative? Which is just another style of negotiation. If we apply the principles from negotiation to conflict resolution, we can do it really well. The one place where it doesn't scale up as well is maybe in politics, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of different aspects to that. But pretty much everything else, you can use all of the different techniques, all of the different ideas, all the foundation of negotiation to resolve most conflicts, because conflict is a difference of opinion. And a negotiation is a difference in ideas. So how do we get to the outcome best? We can use that either in conflict or in negotiation.
That's such a great and succinct way to explain that. Thank you for making that so clear, like a difference in ideas versus a difference in like opinions or like actions, right? So that was very helpful in my own brain to see, like, okay, yeah, no, I totally get that. Really thinking about, you know, when you're out doing this work and you're working with students, you're also, I mean, you've written a book that we can talk about. I'd love to hear kind of how that process was for you. But, you know, it sounds like you really have a heart for sharing these tools and skills with people to improve people's lives, which I think is such an important part of what a leader really does. And, you know, when I invite people into the show to come talk about the work that they do, it's because they are in positions of leadership and they are sort of like shining a light on whatever it is that they're specializing in. How do you see the impact of your work in our local community? I mean, I know you're working with the students here on campus, but outside of that, I know you're active in all sorts of different different things in your own personal life and with your family and things like that. So how do you see these skills that you're, you know, hoping to share with the world? Like, how do you see that making an impact here in your own backyard?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, the students are very important to me and I love working with them and I get a lot out of that. But I take it outside of the students as well. And I've done a lot of different work with some various companies that are here, Austin, Dallas. The book actually came out of a group from Dallas that was interested in how do we balance our ethical decision making with negotiation and how do we get away from, you know, the it's just business problem. And so that's really where the book came from, was from working with this group of CEOs. That was great. I also lead at my church. That's an important factor for me, too. I'm in a leadership position right now as we go through a transitional period. And it's very interesting to me to put this process into place at a church, because churches are such different animals and many of the decisions happen differently at churches. And so to really put this at the forefront, I think it's been very helpful for the church to think about things a little bit differently instead of this is how we always make decisions. Hey, let's embrace a little bit different view. And you would think at church that the we would be a very common thing, but very often because of long-term decision making and processes that have been in place forever and oversight from different bodies, bishops, etc., it's not always the we. And so embracing that, and we don't have votes in my meetings. There are no votes. We come to consensus, which is a little bit more difficult, might take more time, but it's a better process. And in the end, nobody can say they lost.
I love that, like, sort of way to look at what, you know, the outcome is. It's not like, oh, well, we outvoted you, and so your opinion now is kind of obsolete. It's like, we came to whatever the consensus was as a group. So we all feel like we have, you know, skin in the game. We all feel like we have a stake here and we all feel motivated to work towards whatever the goals are that we're working for. And I find it really interesting that you pointed out that, you know, churches, and I think this isn't even just churches, a lot of just legacy organizations, it's change is very difficult just for people in general, but specifically organizations that have been around for a long time. They have had certain norms in place or certain processes, and sometimes challenging those are asking, is there a better way, or could we make things, you know, more transparent or easier for people to navigate, or could we serve the we in a different way? Those can be, you know, tense sometimes conversations. And so I'm sure there's definitely an appreciation of having this sort of perspective on these skills on like, okay, now we're going to try something new and here is a way we could do it. So let's talk about the book, because I feel like for folks listening, if they're like, I really am like intrigued by this and I would love to be able to like bring some of this into my life. Tell us about the book. Like, what's it called? How could they get a hold of it? What's kind of in it? We talked a little bit about kind of how it came to be, but I'd love for you to kind of just tell us a little more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. I worked on it for so long because it's such a process to put these ideas into words that can be communicated in a way that people can apply them to their daily lives. The book is called Settle for More because I think that, you know, we very often settle. And especially in negotiation, a lot of times people settle and they think, well, a compromise is the right thing. I despise a compromise. I want us to push past giving in. And so I thought, we need to settle for more. We need to understand that there is abundance in the world, and if we constrain it with scarcity, we're going to end up with less. And so the book focuses on a lot of the things that we've talked about. It focuses on how can I implement a strategy that is consistent, that is transparent, that is easy to use on my day-to-day basis, so that in every interaction, I end up with better outcomes, more. And so that's really the focus of the book. The other thing that I did in the book that was very important to me was I married the scientific data with the biblical perspective. So it comes at it from a Christian ethical perspective and applies those ethics to the science that's out there in a way that you can use the science positively and use the techniques in the book in a way that lines up with your morals and your values.
That is such a, gosh, like a nuanced and layered way to like build this sort of conversation around negotiation. And so where can people find the book if they're like, oh, this sounds like right up my alley? How would they find it?
Yeah, absolutely. The book is available on Amazon. So if you search Settle for More and my name, Chris Meyer, it will come up. And I would love it if people would take a look at it. It's, you know, the ideas behind it are so consistent with how we want to do business. And I think it fills a niche that's different than some of the other books that are out there. It doesn't have a chapter on ethics. It's got ethics woven all the way through the book. And so it can help you with your decision-making process, regardless of what we're talking about. And that was really my desire when I wrote this.
I want to emphasize how, just like as we're talking, how your passion for what you do is just so evident. Like it comes out in the way that you speak. And so I know that the people listening can't see your face, but I can see your face. And there's an earnestness there that is really so refreshing to hear about people wanting to share what they really have a passion and then they're very good at. Like, and you've done the research. I mean, we've kind of glanced on it a little bit throughout our conversation, but you've spent many years like diving into the science and looking at what actually is effective. It's not just like by feel, right? Like, oh yeah, I have years and this is the stuff that works, you know, like that's a piece of it, but that's not really the bulk of it. The bulk and the meat of it is this research, this body of work that you've put together that you're drawing on. And so I think that's something that I'd like to hear more about. Like, what do you have next coming up? I mean, are you still researching? Are you still working on new avenues? Is there a specific topic within this realm that you're diving into more deeply? Like, what's coming up for you?
There is more research going on. It's, to me, that is a very interesting part of where we are as humans, right? To understand that decision-making better. So most everything that I do is in that decision-making realm. I've looked at groups and teams. I've looked at motivation and emotion, put all that together into the negotiation book. The next step for me is a leadership book. I'm really interested in the idea of how people follow leaders. So I'm going to take it from a different view than just the leadership view, but I'm going to look at the followers as well and look at what is it that's important when you're building followers? And I think that that's a really important thing to think through before you try to lead somebody somewhere is, who do I want to follow me? So
I talk to leaders. Like, that's the purpose of this these conversations. And the thing that strikes me again and again and again is the people who are leading effectively sometimes didn't even know that they were going to be in a position of leadership. They didn't wake up one morning and go, oh, I'm going to lead a company. I'm going to lead a civic organization. I'm going to be the mayor. I'm going to, you know, whatever. They just, by a series of decisions and skills that they've built and learned along the way, people naturally kind of look to them for guidance. And one thing I always like to talk about is how anybody out there can step into a leadership role. And sometimes it's the people who didn't know they were called that make the best leaders. And so hearing you talk about, like, from the reverse side of that, what it could mean as a follower, I think people who are often following, they're also leading, right? Like, it's like there are levels and layers to this. And so I would love to see what that kind of come, the fruition of this research, what it comes into. Is there anything that you're kind of thinking as you're looking into this, like a specific question you're asking about what those characteristics might be?
Absolutely. We have a lot of theories out there about what makes a leader. You know, is it charisma? Is it intelligence? Is it, there are so many different ideas out there about what makes a leader. My thought is anyone can be a leader if you attract followers. So what is it that attracts that follower? And it goes back to that decision-making, like you said. I think it's how do I make decisions? Am I making decisions with integrity? Am I making decisions consistently? Am I making decisions that remove ambiguity for people so that they know which way to go to follow? And I think a lot of those things are really key. And a lot of leaders do it, but they don't know they're doing it. And so I'm going to try and codify it a little bit and see if we can come up with a new theory of leadership that looks at the followers first.
That's exciting. I can't wait to see and hear. We'll have to have a follow-up conversation to find out what you find out.
That would be great.
So just as we're wrapping up here with our last little bit of time, I would just like to ask you, what excites you about the work that you're doing and as you're stepping into these sort of new ideas? What gets you excited every day?
I'm really excited if I can just help one person make better decisions. I mean, honestly, that's what it is. When one person comes up to me and says, hey, you know, in chapter 3, I read that thing about the moral dilemma, and it really made me think through, am I putting people first in my organization? That's why I do this. I just want somebody to get better. And you know, I don't know how wide a reach it will have, but I'm trying to help people with decisions. And I think that I've been given some expertise. I have worked for that expertise over the years, and I want to share that. I want people to think differently about their interactions and do them better.
Is there anything that you would share? Like, you gave us a couple of tips, which I, first of all, thank you for giving us some of these little nuggets. I mean, this has been super helpful, but is there any like last thought or last tip or last, offering you'd like for our listeners to take away from the conversation besides how to find out more about this? But is there anything that you feel like has been like super pivotal and helpful in changing your mindset?
Yeah, I think that we need to be deliberate about our decisions. I think a lot of decisions happen off the cuff, and that's what leads to regret. That's what leads to mistakes. That's what leads to poor decisions and poor outcomes. So I think if we're more deliberate and we think through and are strategic about our thinking, and I don't want you to hear that and think, oh, you know, be devious. No, but be deliberate and do things for a reason. I think that that is one of the biggest things that I try to convey is whether it's a negotiation class or a consulting project or whatever it is, make moves that you know you're going to make. Make moves that are deliberate and that are well thought out, and you'll do better.
Love it. And think of the other person.
And think of the other person.
Those are great tips. I think that's a great way to end our time together. I'm so thankful that you were able to come in and share this conversation. And I can't wait to hear more about what you have coming up in the future. And just want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Central Texas Leadership Series is a production of KWBU. To replay this and previous episodes, just head to the programs page at kwbu.org.